Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
If the 2020 baseball season was a 200-meter race, we are now heading into the straightaway, the last 100 meters, and it should be a lot of fun. Welcome into Big Time Baseball. I'm Tony Gwynn Jr. alongside my partner John Heyman. You can follow us on Twitter at Tony Gwynn Jr. and at John Heyman. Make sure you subscribe, write, rate, and review Big Time Baseball on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Today's show is a good one and a somber one. We'll have Ron Swoboda to join us a little bit later to remember the great, late great Tom Seaver. We'll also get into Lou Brock and his passing and his contributions to the game of baseball that we love so much. But let's start off on the East Coast, especially in remembrance of Tom Seaver. Let's start with the Mets, John, because they have, after losing five straight, they've won four of their last five and seem to be moving in the right direction.
Just when you think they're out of it, that's the Mets for you. Then again, the other way is true, too. When you think they're doing great, sometimes they will break your heart. They obviously will talk to Swoboda later, and that was the greatest moment in Mets history, 1969 World Series. He had that great catch. I'm not foreseeing that for this team, but, they're full of surprises. We shall see. I thought that the deadline, a lot of people criticized them. They needed to get a catcher. They got one. They beefed up the pen. They brought back an old friend who's a clubhouse presence in Frazier. A lot of people thought they needed a starter. You know what? Seth Lugo has looked pretty good in that role. I didn't love that move. I didn't really trust Edwin Diaz. But at this moment, as we sit here now, the Mets look like they might become a threat. We'll see.
They do, and they've cleaned up some of the mistakes in big ways. I mean, they DFA'd Billy Hamilton after he nearly cost them a game back on September 3rd. He got caught stealing, and then the next guy, J.D. Davis, homered, and they had seen enough. They ended up designating him, and you hate to see a guy designated, but at the same token, these teams are out trying to win. And they can't afford to have mistakes. But I want to focus in on Jacob DeGrom. This guy is amazing, simply amazing. He has an ERA of 1.69. He goes seven innings, one earned, two walks, and is in a 14-1 win over the Phillies yesterday. And, now all of a sudden we're having HOF talk already. And I'm interested to see where you land on it. If he retired right now, John, does he get in? Does he have a case to get in?
Well, you have to go 10 years, technically. I'm being very technical here to avoid the question. He has a case. I would say he needs a little bit more. I mean, at this point, I don't want to stick with numbers entirely. I don't have it in front of me, but certainly – You can get in. You don't need 300 wins, certainly, anymore, or probably even 200 wins. There have been guys who've gotten in without the 200 wins. I don't think Sandy Koufax had 200 wins. If you're spectacular over a short period of time, you certainly can be a candidate. Koufax, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, would even have to think about it. So it isn't necessarily a compilation of the wins. And, you know, DeGrom, he's got many more years to go. Obviously, he's one of the best pitchers, if not the best, in baseball right now. So I think he still has many years to go. But being kind of a late starter in the pitching game, he was an infielder at Stetson College. And when the Mets took him and saw something, and good for them that they did, and so he's not going to get the 300 wins. He's not going to get 200 wins. But, you know, I'd say he looks like he's on track, potentially. He's won two Cy Youngs. If you win three, it's probably hard to keep someone out. We'll see. I do have a Cy Young vote this year with the National League.
And, do you know where it's going yet?
Well, you know, you're not allowed to say who you are voting for. But at this point, since the season's not over yet, I can say where I think things stand. I think Yu Darvish is probably the leader for the Cy Young.
I agree.
I don't have it in front of me. I think DeGrom is in that next group with Zach Gallen, who really done a great job. If you look at it, I think he's the WAR leader, whatever that means, in the National League pitchers.
Right.
But right now, I'm with you, Tony. I think Yu Darvish is probably the leader. But once the season ends, don't ask me that question because it's very serious. Jack O'Connell will come to my house and rip the ballot away from me if I tell you who I'm voting for. But
I don't want Jack showing up to your house ripping the ballot.
No,
I definitely don't. I gotta say, in my opinion, I don't know that he has a case yet. As you mentioned, at the very least, I think the lowest bar of Hall of Famers is a 10-year run of just being dominant. He hasn't quite got there. He's 7 years into his career. He's got a few more of years like this to keep putting up, and then we can start to have that conversation. But I agree, he's probably at this point short because, you know, standards have changed over time, right? I think because the game has changed, writers have kind of had to change the standards in terms of who's going to get in, because I don't know if we're going to see 300 win guys anymore, 200 win guys, or the longevity of the game and the way players are used nowadays just don't necessarily give you those type of longevity numbers. But on the flip side of that, if you can have a career like Koufax where you are just dominant for a 10-year span, guys can certainly get in. DeGrom is on pace to do just that. One of the other interesting things go ahead.
Yeah, Jim. I was going to say, I'm a Pete guy. So I'm Koufax is obviously a slam dunk. Nobody would think he's not a Hall of Famer, but right. I'm a Pete guy. So if somebody's great, it doesn't even, to me, have to be great for 10 years. I would say fewer is fine with me. I'm a Pete guy. I voted for Mattingly. You know, to me, it's not, I don't gotcha. Eliminate somebody if they don't have the career numbers. So it'll be an interesting case if he wins this third Cy Young, and he certainly could win it this year or maybe in a subsequent year. If he wins the third Cy Young, and let's say he finishes with 110 wins or something like that, it'll be interesting to look at. But I am a Pete guy, so I do love what he's done so far.
Real quick, before I want to move on to this next subject, because one of the younger players that the Mets have brought through their system all of a sudden is not playing as much. Andrés Giménez has started the last three games at shortstop for the Mets, which means Amad Rosario is not playing. Do you have any idea what the future holds in terms of how the Mets view him? Because he struggled. Let's be honest. He struggled in his time in the big leagues. Hasn't quite gotten to the status that I think everybody anticipated him getting to.
Yeah, he was really good in the second half last year, and nobody saw this coming. I think it was even a surprise that they took him in as for the team, and good for the Mets for doing that. He's been fantastic. He can beat you in a lot of ways. He certainly should be a starting player. I can envision Rosario as the shortstop and Giménez playing all over the field.
Gotcha.
But, you know, at this point, you know, Rosario did struggle, as you said. So, I mean, to me, he's a starting shortstop at the major league level. If he's not going to be with the Mets, you know, maybe he can be a trade candidate. And they trade him and get something for him if they believe, if they are believers in Giménez. It does feel like Luis Rojas believes in Jimenez and feels like he's going to be the starter going forward this year. He's made it clear he's going to play the lineup he feels gives him the best chance every day. And at least for the foreseeable future, I think that will be Jimenez. And, you know, behind the plate, we're going to see a lot of Chirinos, I think, too. You know, Ramos has struggled defensively this year. And, you know, I think Rojas is his first year in New York. It's a weird year. The team has underachieved to this point, at least in the eyes of many of us. And there's a lot of pressure on him to win now. And he's going to go with the hot hand. And right now it's not Rosario.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about the 2020 season is that it forces managers to make these type of decisions, which would normally be in the first couple months of a season, which is actually coming down the stretch run. So you really can't blame managers for putting the best lineup out there that's going to win, especially when everybody seems to be still in. The Mets are 2.5 games behind Philadelphia for second place. Is there anything that you think can get this team over the hump? Because you've seen them a lot more than I have this year. Is there something that they need to get them over the hump?
Well, I think they needed starting pitching. And maybe it will be Lugo. I mean, Lugo, they brought him out of the pen. He was their best reliever. I don't love moving someone out of their role where they're performing so well. And, you know, I just didn't trust Diaz. Now, Diaz obviously has the talent to do it. I'm just sure not sure he's a closer in New York. I could be proven wrong. It wouldn't be the first time, but they needed starting pitching. And if Lugo provides it, maybe that's where they get it. The market was funny. I mean, you know, we've talked about it for the last few weeks. There weren't many starting pitchers traded. You know, there was one great one, Clevinger. The Mets looked at it, him and Lynn. They weren't going to give up top prospects, so they weren't going to go there. I give the Jays credit. They were able to get three starting pitchers. You know, obviously Robbie Ray was struggling. He was basically a giveaway at this point. But they got Taijuan Walker early, and they ended up getting Stripling. They gave up a prospect for Stripling, Kendall Williams, who was people think can be a top of the rotation starter. So they gave up a lot to get Ross Stripling, who was actually struggling this year. So, you know, the Mets weren't willing to mortgage the future. They made three trades. They didn't give up any of their big prospects. They understood where they stood, but you know, it certainly would have been better for them to get a starting pitcher.
All right, let's move into the juicy part of this Mets organization. They've been, obviously, ownership is trying to sell the team, and it looks like they may have singled in on one particular bid, and that has raised the ire of Mr. Alex Rodriguez, who used his media platform to voice his displeasure, feeling like there was some unfairness going on in terms of how these bids were handled. What are you hearing on that front?
Well, that was an interesting one. In the New York Post, there were unnamed sources saying that A-Rod was not happy with the process. He didn't put his name to it, but I did actually talk to Alex this week, and you know, he didn't say that he was upset. He didn't repeat any of that to me. You know, I don't think he's going to say that out loud. He hasn't really denied it publicly, but he did tell Buster Olney for publication, and Buster tweeted that A-Rod was fine with the process. He's just very disappointed, and that's what he told me. Now, of course, he could have a publicist who was more disappointed than him, or he could have a publicist who was doing his bidding. We don't know exactly what went on there. You know, I will say that I like Alex personally. He's got charisma and charm, and he's intelligent. He knows the game. He loves the game. He certainly could have brought a lot of positives to the team. But, you know, I think he's smart enough not to publicly, at least, complain about the process. You know, going in that the most important thing in the process, and let's be fair about it, both he and Steve Cohen, who right now is not just a leader, he's the presumptive winner. And, you know, you never know how this will turn out because it's not over yet. They both have some issues on their resume. They don't have perfect resumes, but, you know, Alex with the PED suspension and Steve Cohen was fined for insider trading allegations. And I say allegations. He was fined. He did pay a fine. He was not found guilty of anything or convicted of anything. So we have to be fair to all parties here. But going in that it's about the money. And Steve Cohen has a reported $15 billion. I haven't looked at his finances. And if I did, I probably wouldn't be able to be smart enough to figure out exactly what it meant. But right. He's certainly much richer, and he has the money by himself. And Alex took issue with me tweeting that Alex didn't have the money. Now, he didn't have it by himself, Alex maintains that he had the money with all of his partners, seven billionaires that he had. Of course, it depends how much money they were giving in. And it was reported that he was going to take out a loan. Not that others don't take out a loan, and maybe Steve Cohen will too, but Steve Cohen doesn't need to take out a loan. He had the money by himself. And to be fair about it, that's what it's about ultimately, as long as there's nothing that is disqualifying about the people who want the team. You have to have sound finances, and Alex's may have been sound enough if he was the only candidate for the team, and there was Harris Blitzer as well. But if you have a candidate with $15 billion, it's tough to win. That's the process, and so he didn't make that complaint to me. But if he did, the complaint would fall on deaf ears. Steve Cohen has the money for the team, so that's why he got the team.
Yeah, leave it to a New Yorker to take a little shot at A-Rod not having enough money as he seemingly is moving into the final stages of hopefully wrapping up a deal that I think a lot of Mets fans are looking forward to. Let's move, John, to some sad news. Yesterday, news broke that the original stolen base king, Lou Brock, passed away at age 81. I'm sure today, as news kind of circulated throughout the day after games had started, I'm sure we'll see some tributes today. But Lou Brock, one of the first of his kind to really use the stolen base the way that he did, and really set the stage for stolen base guys moving forward after his career.
Yeah, it's been a sad week in Major League Baseball to lose two greats of the game, Tom Seaver and Lou Brock, within a one-week period. Lou Brock, very nice man. Clear Hall of Famer, fantastic career, more than 3,000 hits, still is the National League stolen base champion, crown holder, whatever you want to call it. And I saw he was traded from the Cubs in one of the all-time most lopsided trades ever, Ernie Broglio for Brock. Broglio had 118 games in the season for the Cardinals. Previously, he came down with a sore arm. I believe he only won seven games for the Cubs. Brock, in his first year, led the team to a World Series championship over the Yankees, and that would have been enough. But he went on, and the 12 subsequent years, the next 12 years, he averaged 99 runs and 65 stolen bases. I credit Rick Hummel for figuring that out, the commissioner, as we call him. An old-time baseball writer who's still a writer and columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. But Lou Brock, what a clutch player. Every time he played in the World Series, he was absolutely fabulous and a very nice man. Did you have a chance to meet him? Obviously, your dad being a Hall of Famer, you occasionally, and you having a nice long major league career, occasionally get to meet him. But one or two times that I ran to Lou Brock, I found him to be a very nice man.
Super, super gentleman is, I think, what I would call Lou Brock. And I remember as a young kid being obsessed with Ricky Henderson, and my dad forcing me to sit down and learn about Lou Brock, because that's really who started that that kind of style of play, if you will. And you know, we talk a lot about Lou Brock in the stolen bases, but you mentioned it, 3,000 hits, man. That just doesn't come for a guy that is solely just out there butting his way on. Lou Brock could hit, lifetime 293 hitter. And listen, I think we obviously lost. You said this week has been tough for Major League Baseball. It certainly has. We lose Tom Seaver and we lose Lou Brock. Both guys who were baseball royalty in this game, and certainly saddens all of us as we deal with the loss of two baseball legends. Moving on to our next subject, John. Joe West, back in the news again. And this one's right out of the Joe West book. Apparently, in yesterday's game, he ejects GM Mike Rizzo for not wearing a mask. Now, Joe is also the same umpire that in a publication earlier before the season got started, actually, was saying it was all a hoax in the first place. So I find it interesting, not only that he ejects Mike Rizzo for not having a mask, but apparently Mike Rizzo was in a suite by himself. I just don't get this one, John.
Well, Joe West is quite a character, and I do think that does appear to be why he was ejected, although he actually had another story later that he heard some barking, or somebody in their crew heard some barking from Rizzo way out there on that from the suite. I don't know. I mean, I have to say it just to, you know, because this is what Joe West said. We have to give both sides to it. It seems ridiculous. I know that the stadiums are virtually empty and you can hear a lot, but I'm finding it hard to believe that he heard what Rizzo said from that box. But, I mean, you know, we got to throw it out there because that's what he said. In any case, Joe West just loves the attention, and
he does.
That's basically it. He wants the attention, and he, you know, even took the, you know, he was on the Zoom call, I guess, with the writers later, then said that he would even eject President Trump if he heard Trump say those things about him, and then took the time to say that he would vote for President Trump anyway. Again, even if he said those, I don't know why he had to add that, but I found it very interesting. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to be political, but it was – he loves the attention. He loves the spotlight. Those are facts that we know and forever, and it's – you know, I think umpires have a forever tenure. I don't know exactly how that happened, but that's the way it is. And after watching all these games on TV, as I have, the box that they put up there – I am now completely gone 180, and I am four robo umps. I've now moved over to the other side on the robo umps, and it's only too bad we're not going to have robo umps because of Joe West on first base, second base, and third base too. He gets under my skin. I'll just say that. But I'm in favor of now the robo umps for the home plate, for the ball and strike calls. It's not all his fault, but. I don't know if you noticed that too, Tony. That
I'm glad borderline calls.
They might as well flip a coin on the borderline calls because they get no more than 50% of them right.
I'm glad you brought it up. It's been a discussion in our room here in Fox Sports San Diego and in our radio room. It has been a noticeable difference this year on especially the balls and strikes this year. It's been. And I'm not one that really gets on umpires very often, but it has been noticeably bad this year. And from umpires who I think are really good umpires this year. So certainly the case is getting stronger for these robo umps that I absolutely despise. But at some point, you gotta try to get these things a little bit closer to right, right?
Yeah, maybe. I'm just throwing this out there. Again, I'm looking at the other side as I did for Joe West and his claim of hearing something from Mike Rizzo, which I doubt again. But just to show the other side just a little bit, maybe it's they didn't have spring training. You know, obviously they had the teams played that second spring training in their own park, and there weren't games with all the umpires. You know, there weren't enough games, and also 12 of the better umpires opted out this year. And
that's
so
true.
We've got some, I was going to say fake umpires. That's terrible. I don't want to say fake anything anymore. Replacement or, you know, we have some substitute umpires. Even replacement has a negative connotation to it. Some substitute umpires, and maybe that's affecting it, but it's basically 50-50 on the call.
You know what else could be affecting it is that we're seeing the same umpires because they're not really traveling out of the regions that they're in. So chances are without those 12 umpires that, you know, have opted out, and the minor league umpires or the rotational umpires that come up and down from the minor leagues to the big leagues, that could have something to do with it too. We are seeing the same groups pretty much stay on the whatever part of the United States they're in, they're staying. They're not traveling around like they, mm-hmm. Like they usually do. But and by the way, all of this happened to Mike Rizzo right after getting a 3-year extension or 3-year extension. So maybe this was a kind of a parting gift for the from the umpires, or at least Joe West to him.
Could be. I don't think. I'm not going to give Joe West the blame on that one. He's jealous over the extension. I think that was probably coincidental. I agree.
Just giving Joe a hard time because he certainly gave me a hard time when I was playing. So
you didn't deserve it, Tony.
Mike Trout continues his assault on major league pitching. Hit his 300th home run. Before his 30th birthday, becomes the Angels' all-time home run leader. Trout is the fastest player ever to 300 homers and 200 stolen bases, passing all-time great in Willie Mays. I got a chance to watch Trout in a 2-game set against the Padres. He only went 1-for-8, but his presence is cleared. And listen, there's not a lot of argument. He right now, in terms of how long he's been doing it, is the best player in the big leagues right now. There's just not a lot of argument there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you see the only guy that you could make a case for, and he just hasn't done it long enough, and that's Fernando Tatis Jr.
Right.
But Trout has now done 10 years. We talked about the Hall of Fame earlier. He's now qualified. This is his 10th year, so now he's qualified. That's all he needed to get in the Hall of Fame. And just an incredible hitter, incredible player. It's interesting that he passed Willie Mays. He's probably the most similar player to Mays and Mantle. I would have kind of said Mantle. His career seems to be similar. Of course, Mantle lived a little differently off the field. You wonder what Mantle could have done if he wasn't having such a great time off the field. And Trout is a pretty wholesome fellow, certainly compared to Mantle. But their career is very similar. Both incredible combinations of power and speed that you don't see. I mean, Bo Jackson, comes to mind with the combination of power and speed that Mantle and Trout and Bo Jackson, of course, was distracted by playing football too. Distracted is probably not the right word, but his time was divvied up, and he also had that hip injury that changed his speed and his career, certainly, and probably his power as well. But Trout and Mantle, if you look at their careers, I know people made that comparison early, and I was kind of poo-pooing that as someone who had seen the end of Mantle's career, but they're very, very similar. Mike Trout, just a fantastic guy, and I agree with you, the best player in the game right now.
Yeah, listen, I think the only thing that stops Trout from, just being his face being plastered everywhere is, I don't know that that's in his DNA. I don't know that he likes that type of thing. So this, what you see is what you get from Mike Trout. And I don't know that he'll ever be like a Fernando Tatis Jr. who seems to kind of enjoy being in the light and handles it well. It seems like Mike is a little uncomfortable in that set.
You know what? I find him to be a great personality. You're right that he hasn't gone out of it. He hasn't gone to seek it. He's certainly no Joe Weston looking for the attention. But if you follow Mike on Twitter, you know he has a personality and a sense of humor, and he's got other interests, which is great. He's a great weather savant. He knows a lot about the weather. I think his next career will be at the Weather Channel. It's interesting to see. I find him to be a great personality, but he isn't out there. You're right about that. And that's the only thing that's probably keeping him from becoming, Mickey Mantle certainly playing in New York helped and getting World Series. That helped as well. And, as the Angels they're hot now, but, they've underachieved dramatically this year. And the pitching, they've never gotten that straight. And, maybe that's part of it too. They're not in the playoffs and they're not in New York. I don't want to be New York centric, but I think that's all part of it. But Mike Trout's an all-time great, however you slice it.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to say that he doesn't have a good part. I know Mike has a terrific personality, but not everybody wants to be in front of a camera all the time. I know my father was like that, so I certainly don't blame him, and I actually respect it that he just wants to go out, play baseball, and have a good time doing it. All right. Let's talk about Francisco Cervelli. This is kind of a sad story. He suffered yet another concussion. This is quite a few for him in his 12-year career. This could be the last one, though, John.
Yeah, I think it might be. We'll see. He's quite a gamer, and he wants to continue his career. And I know that the first doctor suggested that maybe this should be it. He may have said it a little more strongly than that, but I wasn't in the room, so I don't want to say that. But he's going out to seek second and third opinions to see if he can play again. The unofficial count is 7 concussions for him, and people thought his career would be over earlier, and he kept going and kept going. But, I mean, you know, one more foul tip, he's taking chances. And, you know, obviously he'd have to pass the protocols first, which I don't believe he's done. But I think if the doctors tell him the time's up, he should listen to the doctors, and I'm sure that the Marlins will too. But what a great personality he has, and he was great for the Marlins in the games early when Alfaro was out with the COVID, as most of their team was, and helped kept them alive and kept that, you know, got that streak going against the Orioles early on. And really, the Marlins still in playoff position as we speak here today anyway. So it's interesting to see what's going on there with the Marlins.
Yeah, no, definitely. Cervelli has put together a really good career at that catching position. And it is crazy to say that the Marlins are still in it. We're going to step away, take a break for a sec. We still have Ron Swoboda, the interview, kind of remembering the late, great Tom Seaver. Plus, we got John Heyman's Insider Corner. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.